The South Australian Labor Party is expected to win the state election tomorrow in a landslide. But as voters head to the polls, there could be a major shift in what kind of parties make up the final parliament. An increased disillusion with major parties recorded at recent state and federal elections has seen the share of votes for independent and minor parties rise. In South Australia, this trend is likely to continue across the political spectrum. The Wire's Emma Watsky has the story.
South Australia is witnessing a record number of candidates contesting the election, including a dozen minor parties and 38 independent candidates, with many pushing for system-wide policy change. The SA Socialist Party arrived on the political scene late last year as a new contender for the state election, competing in the seat of Croydon, which is currently held by the Premier Peter Melanouskas. Leader Ahmed Azar says he believes the current system is failing.
When you look at all of the serious problems affecting society at the moment, whether that's the housing crisis, the ecological destruction that's taking place, war and genocide that we're seeing spread around the world, it comes back to the fact that power remains in the hands of a tiny group of billionaires who are only interested in enriching themselves. We have a system which is about infinite growth on a planet that only has finite resources. And so I think if we want to actually confront these fundamental issues, we have to recognize that they're tied to the structures of our society, they're tied to the profit motive, and address those problems at the root and build a society that puts people before profit.
Former South Australian Director of Public Prosecutions, King's Counsel Stephen Pallaras, is the leader of minor party Real Change SA. He's contesting the South Australian state election to represent the Legislative Council, and he says domestic violence laws are in need of reform.
We do not prioritise the safety of victims. And by that I mean when the police are called out dozens of times each day to a domestic violence situation, they are trained and told to go into the house, remove the victim from the house, and usually a woman and children, and leave the perpetrator in the house. To me, that is ridiculous. They should remove the perpetrator from the house, forbid him, if it's a male, from coming back to the house or coming within 5 kilometres of the house to be monitored by electronic ankle straps, and if they do breach those conditions, then they are to be immediately arrested and locked up without bail. We need a special court specialising in domestic violence with a magistrate who has particular training in this issue. We need lawyers who are trained in domestic violence traumas, because we're not. I've not had any training in it. We need police officers who are also trained to be sympathetic. We need the electronic monitoring of perpetrators, and we have a budgetary surplus of $179 million in which we can use, I would think, to provide more refuges for women and access to emergency housing lists. We need to immediately create an offence of economic coercion. We also need mandatory police recording of domestic violent risk indicators. We need to look at alcohol supply reform and also firearms supply reform.
Mr. Azar says the SA Socialists are particularly concerned with the rise in far-right parties like One Nation.
All across the world, and it's a very similar story, where you have neoliberal centrist parties that fail to meet the needs of ordinary people, that say that, you know, things are okay as they are, that defend the status quo, and the far right is able to emerge and present itself as an alternative to that, to say that, you know, life is getting harder. But then they deflect the blame away from those who are responsible, from the billionaires, the corporations who have been profiting from the housing crisis and from the cost of living crisis. And so, yeah, we're really focused on confronting the rise of One Nation and confronting the rise of the far right. And one way that we're doing that is by trying to build the politics of hope, to say to people that, yes, life is getting harder in Australia, but it's not because of your migrant neighbours living down the road.
One Nation has emerged as a major contender at the state level after a range of controversies within the SA Liberals has pushed voters towards the minor party. This change in voter intention has sparked concerns amongst researchers of far-right ideologies and political movements, enough to facilitate a forum on gender justice mid-election campaign. Senior lecturer in US history at Flinders University, Dr. Prudence Flowers, was one of the speakers at this event, and she says there is a real concern conservative representatives could hold the balance of power in the state's upper house.
I think a lot of people assume that this election is going to be a shoo-in for Labor, and that's certainly true in the lower house. But in the upper house, in the Legislative Council, it's much less clear what the future of that body is going to look like. And there are multiple far-right parties running candidates in SA, some of which are almost certainly going to get people in. And so although these candidates aren't necessarily running on issues like abortion or trans rights or sex work decriminalisation, they have long established histories around those issues. And I think it's really important that voters are aware of what these candidates actually stand for.
Given the rise of conservative minor parties and the evidence of a shift to the right in SA's Legislative Council, how do you think that this could affect the balance of power and the development or reversal of progressive social reforms in the state moving forward?
So if we look at the example of abortion, there have been two legislative attempts to sort of start eroding or winding back abortion rights in this state. And both of them failed in the Legislative Council, but they failed by very, very narrow margins. And so any shift in the balance of power is going to potentially mean that these issues pass the upper house and go down to the lower house. And I think these have significant consequences in terms of both emboldening anti-abortion, anti-LGBTQIA+, anti-gender kind of activists, but they also open up issues that many people view as kind of settled. You know, abortion is healthcare, but here we see a shift towards the politicisation of healthcare and the kind of weaving in of more American-style tactics where you're constantly trying to chip away at rights. And so I think the concern here is not necessarily that there'll be major legal changes, for example, around abortion in the next term, but it's going to open this up as an area of political activity. And for trans rights and for trans issues, I think there are much more significant concerns in place if we look at the example of what's happened in other states and territories in Australia, where, you know, the right of children, or sorry, I should say minors, to access gender-affirming care has been paused in places like Queensland, or where we've seen wholesale attacks and kind of vilification of trans women in prison. You know, these are active campaigns going on in Australia right now, and it's a very live space for these kinds of issues to be championed by people in our parliament if these far-right figures get in.
Senior lecturer in US history at Flinders University, Dr. Prudence Flowers-Day, speaking with The Wire's Emma Watsky.